Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
Welcome to the podcast. Today we have Shabini from UTS, who is the lecturer in data science and innovation. How are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, pleasure. Good to hear. Carl, do you want to kick off the first question, my friend?
Wonderful, absolutely. And Dr. Shabani Antoinette, I should say, absolutely. We have a doctorate here today. Welcome aboard and thank you very much for coming to the podcast. Now, obviously, you're doing a lot of research and lecturing with UTS. So can you give us a bit of a background on how, you know, you fell into that field? A lot of people obviously run to university and then are quick to jump out into the corporate world, but obviously you found a lot of love in that area. So tell us a little bit about your journey there.
Sure. So I'm Shabani. Like you said, I'm a lecturer at the Faculty of Transdisciplinary Innovation here at University of Technology, Sydney. I'm a teaching team member of the Master of Data Science and Innovation degree, which is one of the leading programs here, which focuses on data and analytics. And it's the first interdisciplinary degree in Australia where creativity and innovation are critical components. My background is in computer science. I'm a computer science engineer by training. I did my undergraduate degree in India, and then I did a master's degree in Singapore. I went into academia after my master's degree, found love into research, and was working there for about 3 years. And then I joined UTS as a PhD graduate. So I was I completed my PhD in learning analytics at the Connected Intelligence Center at UTS, which does a lot of work on data analytics and the human-centered perspective of data, particularly in education. So during my doctoral studies, I was teaching part-time into this degree, MDSI, and after which I actually joined full-time in this position. So that's where I'm coming from.
Wonderful. And one of the big areas you mentioned, obviously, you're now looking at the transdisciplinary innovation side of things, which, you know, kind of crosses across all different sectors and disciplines within the technology sector. But one of the areas you did study in Singapore was around teamwork, I believe, which is kind of the human element around that aspect. So how important does that tie in, you know, with some of the more technical aspects of the course degrees?
They're very important. Teamwork, critical thinking, creativity, all of these are integral parts of how you work with data, because technical humanism is obviously just one part of the whole skill set. You obviously need all of these complex skills for students to be able to communicate the value to stakeholders, bring some real change, and bring about meaningful insights for businesses. So there's a lot of focus on these skills in the degree, as well as in my research, my past research, which was particularly about teamwork in Singapore. But that particular research was around school students, and now it's a lot about higher education. But these skills, they are life skills, and they apply to learners of all ages, and everyone has to have them, especially in this world. You know, the skills and the things that we need from these graduates are changing, and we don't even know what the jobs will look like in the next 30, 40 years. So we need to prepare them for the future.
UTS is quite, a very cutting edge university globally. And it's great to see these innovations being brought in. And especially when myself and Michael talk with a lot of industry leaders, one of the big things that they always say is, you know, the people who often will get the job when they're starting out are the ones who can clearly articulate, you know, what they're trying to build or produce for, you know, their employer, or those that can very well communicate within a team. So is that now becoming a much heavier focus within the UTS, not only the enrollment process, but also within the course modules as well?
It's definitely a key component in all degrees, that we make graduates who are ready for the industry, who are ready to work in the real world. So they have the technical knowledge or whatever content knowledge that they have, so which is the typical mastery of knowledge and the skills. But what goes beyond and pushes them really to be in the forefront and take the leadership is actually those other skills that are really important to kind of push them forward in whatever direction they're taking in. So all of the curriculum are heavily focusing on these skills along with the topics. So there's teamwork involved, collaboration in much of the design of these different courses. And there's also ways to think about authentic assessments. It's one, I guess, core principle in many UTS courses. So in our degree, for example, in MDSI, our master's students are working with projects which are quite authentic. All the assessments are project-based. They work with either individually or in teams, but they work with real data sets. They work with industries and so on. So it goes beyond the theoretical knowledge and understanding of what someone tells you from a lecture to how you can actually apply it into practice. So that is the key skill that we want to build in all our graduates.
I've been fortunate enough to have some students from your program actually this year. I just realized the other day when we're talking. And what I found is, as you said, giving them some real data in industry to learn. Mm-hmm. Some of the things they can't necessarily learn from obviously doing the courses, but one thing that I found which was beneficial was they able to bring the business context and the IT context into one conversation. Is that something that you guys focus on with the training or with the course outline also?
Yeah, we do, exactly. So there are technical competence. Obviously, it's a data science degree, so they learn all those technical skill sets, but there's also a very strong focus on human-centered design, ethics, and the communication aspect of it. So they have assessments that focus specifically on how you present to different stakeholders, especially if they're non-technical stakeholders. How do you communicate value to them? How do you make kind of convince them and negotiate and persuade them that your data has some value in it? And because that's what they want to see. They want to hear stories. They don't want to hear big numbers or charts, but actually the stories that communicate value. So that is a key skill that we want to build in all the students. And that is intentionally part of the curriculum in different ways, actually. So they learn not just by the theoretical concepts or the lectures and the teaching, but they learn by doing. So there's a lot of practical knowledge that they gain with the data sets and the assessments which they are set in. And there's a lot of collaboration, teamwork, hands-on activities, tutorials during those teaching sessions. And they happen both in a blended learning mode, so which means there are face-to-face sessions, and there are also online sessions and pre-work and tutorials for them to go and learn from. And I already talked about these authentic assessments, which are again a key part of actually getting their skills by using hands-on experience. So, and this agility and experimentation, which is also built in, because sometimes things just don't work, so they fail. But they really need to understand different methodologies, try different approaches, and if one approach works in a particular business context but doesn't work in another one, they need to recognize this early, kind of pivot and find new ways of applying things, and build models that can work for that particular business context. So these are built in the different assessments, in the different contents and topics, and whatever activities that we design as part of the teaching.
What do you find the challenges are with the course, with the outline? Is there anything that stands out for you that they sometimes struggle with and need to improve on with the course?
So in terms of challenges, I think this is, again, this particular aspect that we are trying to teach and we're focusing on is in fact a challenge, because some of them are not quite used to this. They come from heavily technical backgrounds. They have engineering degree. They are not used to working with diverse teams and so on. But we have this transdisciplinary approach where the beauty of the course itself is that the cohort comes from a range of disciplines. They have, we have IT professionals, we have lawyers, we have accountants. People who have never written a line of code in their lives. So they all come together, and it's like a wonderful opportunity for them to learn from each other and understand different perspectives of problem solving, how others look at the problem and how they try to solve it, and so on. So again, this kind of working with different people from different disciplines is probably a challenge for some of them, but that's where we give them more training and basically teach them or give them more practice on doing this better. Again, with communication, again, with what is again important is not how you communicate with your peers, because a lot of scientists can do it very well, but how do you communicate it beyond that set of stakeholders you're used to engage with? So that is really a big challenge. And again, there are steps and ways and activities for inducting students into that process effectively.
And I guess your area of expertise at the moment really is around the data science component. If we look back 6 years, you know, data scientists would have been a very rare, you know, job position to find for someone looking for. But it's become very mainstream, and most industries now across all verticals are really looking for that, you know, data scientist team to help them get the most out of their data. But with so much data now being produced, you know, what are some of the methods that you have to, you know, tell the students on how to cut through the noise and really get to the source of how to build really good, you know, data models that are useful?
Yeah. So like I said, Carl, it's a growing industry. It's rapidly growing. In fact, in the last few years that almost every conceivable industry has data and is looking for insights from what they can pull from that data. Yeah, it's one of the leading demand on demand positions in 2022, and we see that already.
What are some of the, I guess, from a technique perspective on, you know, building good data models? Like, what are some of the primary techniques that you're teaching your students on what to look for, you know, and just sort of cut through some of the noise of data that might not be relevant, for example?
Sure. So the key techniques are, they basically learn machine learning, which is one of the important components of the course and the degree and the applied. But often insights can come from very simple exploratory data analysis, looking at data, building effective visualization, communicating insights from the visualizations to stakeholders, making sure that there is a clear business problem, even identifying that problem and framing that problem is quite important, because you need to know what data to look for, what is the question you're trying to solve, what is the business outcome out of it, and how can data help you solve that problem. So framing those sort of questions. And again, there are more advanced courses as well, like deep learning, where they go into details of big, huge amounts of data and image recognition and that sort of techniques. But the basics are about also learning those coding languages, which are very common, like R and Python, which most data scientists use, and pieces of databases and SQL, Unix, and so on. But again, the other skills that I talked about earlier, like communication and creativity and critical thinking.
Are you finding that there's one specific industry vertical that's, you know, working with UTS more than, you know, another? So say, is the finance section working with more of your team and some of the, I guess, the graduate and internship positions for, you know, data analytics and data science compared to something like, you know, agriculture or mining? Is there a specific vertical that's more engaged with UTS at the moment?
I don't really think so, because we do have industry projects coming from a number of industries. They're all using data in very different ways. But obviously there are some industries which benefit from data a bit more than the others. So for example, healthcare. So there are healthcare management systems and building dashboards and getting organizations a better understanding of people's health statistics, better diagnostics, and you know, drug interactions and so on. And there are projects we have from, like, retail is another growing sector where there are a number of projects about online and offline shopping experiences, improving customer experiences. Banking and insurances traditionally have used a lot of data, analyzing risks and, again, improving customer experiences and so on. We also have nonprofit organizations which come in, and they're basically trying to predict donations coming in. Government organizations. We also have government organizations coming in to see how the data they have from different sectors can have impact Again, we also have a number of startups, SMEs, which come in for specific products that they're developing using some machine learning or artificial intelligence technologies. And again, we know this huge uptake of AI and data science in agriculture. There are more and more tools coming in on that. We've also had a few projects on that kind of sector. But in general, we do have a wide range of different industries coming in and trying to use data.
And one of the areas I noticed that you're quite, passionate about as well is kind of, applying these technologies also from a classroom and learning enhancement capability as well. So can you tell us a bit more about that? Like, what are some of the things that you're doing with, machine learning and data analysis of, say, for example, chats between students online, for example, to try and push a better learning experience?
Sure. So there's a whole field of applying data and analytics in education, which is called learning analytics or educational data science, education data mining, which has been there for about 10 years or so now. And the goal is to use these advanced technologies to find instances of data or use techniques that we can use to improve student experience or educator experience, improve teaching. So we can use these kind of technologies to augment the traditional practices in education because it hasn't changed so much over many, many years. So things like a lot of my research is around text analysis and natural language processing. So my PhD was particularly around designing automated writing feedback for students. So using finding patterns of text in student writing, giving them some sort of automated feedback to help them improve their writing. And in some of my past projects, I've also worked on analyzing chat data, like you said. So here we're looking for how students interact with each other, looking for dimensions of teamwork. Is someone a good collaborator? Is someone good with decision-making in a team and so on by looking at the chat text that the students are writing. And there are a number of applications of these sorts of data that we can use. So for instance, we can actually predict if a student is likely to fail a subject. So we can, if we know that in advance, we can kind of intervene and give some additional support for them, or we can give them email reminders to complete certain tasks, or we can just build them a dashboard to show. So this is what we see as your interaction with the learning platform, for instance. So they can understand, okay, I'm not engaging with certain content so much, and they can improve their patterns. So these are a few examples.
With the actual models you mentioned before, when you're teaching the students, I know with the students I've had this year, I've been talking with, they bring in a lot of models into analyzing data, which is good, and experimentation. Is there any particular models that you use more than others, like maybe linear regression or forest algorithms or models? Is there any particular ones that you direct the students to, or do you just let them go and experiment and find out which one works the best?
Yeah, the program definitely gives them an introduction and overview for all of these different models and the techniques that are available. And then we usually don't have one solution that fits all. So we definitely look for what works best for a particular problem that they have in hand. So if they have to predict numbers, or if they have to predict categories, or so it really depends on that, if they want to use a regression or a classification algorithm, for instance, or they're just looking for text analysis and sentiment analysis and those sort of word vector features that they're looking for. The key part that we teach is actually to look for specific problems and focus on that, and then think about what models they can apply and test and try it out. And there's a bit of experiment in this because they do need to apply it with the data they have, try it with training and data sets, see how the model works, look for accuracies and precisions and recalls. And again, there is a lot of trade-off they might be doing. Depending on the circumstances. So for instance, in some examples, they might not need a very accurate data, but they want better recall. Like they want to catch whatever possible things that come into that category. Or there might be instances where it's fine to have some negatives, which is fine. It's not a very critical one. Say you're just seeing if it's a spam or not, or something like that, which is an example. Whereas there are examples where it's really critical that you catch the accurate precision and define them into categories. Say if you're detecting if a tumor is cancerous or not. So depending on all of those circumstances, you actually define those metrics, you define the right algorithms to use and put it in place.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, it's the problem solving and setting the actual outcome. Sometimes it won't produce an outcome, correct? You know, that's the elephant to learn, isn't it?
Yeah, that's perfectly right. And in fact, you need to know if it's a good place to apply a model. And that's equally important as learning to implement a model. You know, for simple or very simple problems where maybe you don't even need a big, a complex AI solution or a data model. You just need to look at the data and come up with some basic analysis, and that's going to help your stakeholder the most. So they really need to decide what's the right place to put a model in, and then what the right model is for that particular situation.
No, definitely. With the master's students, is there any other areas they're coming from? Like, for example, finance or accounting, or where do you find a lot of your master's students come from in the actual interdisciplinary area?
They come from all disciplines. So, like I said, we do have accountants. We have people working in finance, lawyers. We've had teachers. We have IT professionals, and again, they come from very different all walks of life. That is usually the case. And they also have different expertise levels. So some of them are looking to transition to a new role. Some of them are very passionate about data. They want to learn about this new field. They probably have worked with some data in their current work experience, and they want to know more and apply more advanced methods. And some of them just want to totally change their career paths. They're doing something else. They want to come into this emerging data science field. And they also are coming at different stages of their professional lives, who just started or 2 or 3 years into their professional lives, and also senior executives who want to move into more data-related positions. So that's where the diversity really comes in. This whole cohort of people from very diverse positions. We've also had people with PhDs who are coming from the things like chemical sciences and nuclear sciences and so on. So, and all of these are really, really useful because they're bringing their own disciplinary perspective. We've had students working on mining, education, agriculture, retail. So it's a wonderful experience bringing those perspectives together.
From your perspective, Shivani, what do you think makes for a good student? Like, what are some of the qualities that they should, you know, exhibit before coming into a course? Obviously, love technology is one, but what are some of the other areas that you see as common success grounds within the data science category?
Yeah, I think the ability to learn and unlearn and relearn, that is really important, because they will have preset perspectives or ideas that they take from their workplace or the experience that they've had. But it's also important to learn from others and understand and learn to communicate with different people. Basically, the intention to be more open, I think that is really important. And learn that it is a continuous process, learning process. So you just can't finish learning everything in a degree or say for anything for that matter. So you may spend 5 years, but there's still something new coming up. So you need to be really open to learning more as you go and keep up to date with the field, because this is a rapidly growing field and there are changes coming in every day. There are new algorithms being developed around the world. And something that works well today might not work well the next day. There might be more improvements. So you really have to be open-minded and be able to learn new things as you go and be challenged. Again, the communication aspect is really important, because you do need to work with a whole lot of stakeholders who are not technical. So you need to have developed that skill. So it's important to have that at the back of your mind at all times, that you're not just learning how to code or do a technical program, but also make sure that it makes sense and it's meaningful for the people who are working on it.
One of the big ones we've been discussing the last couple of podcasts on data is data ethics. Is that something that you guys teach and cover off in the course outline from your point of view?
Yes. In fact, it is one of the core things that we focus on in MDSI, because we know ethics is really important. We've seen how the lack of consideration of ethics has gone to some terrible failures in AI, especially in large data sets where there's bias in how the data was collected and how it's being put into practice. Very common example, ImageNet database, which has very huge biases in terms of people from minorities and women. Whenever a programmer is tagged, it's usually a white male. And those sort of things kind of propagate into the algorithms that the models use and have decisions, and they affect people either directly or indirectly in some way. So an algorithm can decide who gets a mortgage or not, and basically it might just focus on your demographics and your ethnicity, and it targets vulnerable communities. So it's a really important focus of the degree and what we teach students as well, to consider these repercussions and consequences of how the data looks like and why ethics is really important. So as part of the degree itself, we teach them and we help them identify those ethical frameworks. And the Data Ethics Canvas from the Open Data Institute is a wonderful resource. And basically we ask them to think about these human-centered perspective of how data can be applied, what possible effects could it have, what ifs, and what any if there's any potential harm that it might be causing, and thinking beyond short-term goals. So what happens in the long term? What if something is wrong? What went wrong here, and so on?
And do you find that in the course, the best way to do that is also profile the data? So plan before you actually write your models or apply the models to some data, you know, where you're going to store it. You know, is it adequate enough? Is it missing date of births or things like that? Or is it got gaps? And is that actually fine? Also, you get them thinking that way, do some better planning before they execute.
Yeah, exactly. Because Radley data comes in a very clean, easy to use form. It almost never comes like that. Have a set of bunch of really neat data with no missing rows, and you can straight away apply to a model that almost never happens. So they do understand that data is incomplete. It's fuzzy, it's messy. So you need to look at what data represents and in all of those data sets they collect, and then apply suitable techniques if they want to clean up that data, and if needed, maybe get more data or contact more people to get what data they need, because our data may not answer all the questions we have. So we just can't pull up things from the data itself. So all of these, are really critical and part of the teaching.
From your perspective, Shabani, where do you see, you know, some of the common trends for the next couple of years in this space? You know, is there anything that you can sort of give us any insights on what you think, you know, from your experience we'll be moving into? Do you think there'll be more of a focus on, you know, I guess sort of data science, I hate to say as a service, but, you know, do you see more of potentially some of the cloud guys offering things like, you know, AWS and Azure are at the moment, where you sort of throw your data in and you've got pre-built models that you sort of, you know, cut and shut for each industry? Do you see more of that on-demand approach happening?
Yeah, we definitely do see that coming in quite a bit. And that's a good opportunity for companies which don't have the capacity to maybe build their own models and don't have enough data, or they want to use something straight out of the box. And it could be a good way to trial something as well, to see if it's a good fit for their organization before diving into something new and building their own data science team. But sometimes it's also helpful for industries to think about a dedicated data science team and having projects that are specifically looking at, because the context makes a lot of difference. And the way a particular data is defined for a context is very different from how it might work in another context. So sometimes those products might not really work in your particular context when you're working with a very specific form of data, but it can work quite well for standard products like, you know, speech to text recognition, for example. We don't have to reinvent the wheel by creating our models when there's something which is doing a pretty good job. But again, it's good to look at the sources and the details of what data it is based on, because some of these are proprietary, so we don't really have the details of how they are working. Whereas when you build your own products, your own models, you have that flexibility of changing things. You have the flexibility of adding new data when you have new data coming in, and building your own pipelines, which are quite useful for industries in the long term, and they can build a streamlined process. So it can look like a bit of a work in the beginning to set it up, but it can help them out in the long term in kind of bringing it up. In terms of trends, there's quite a lot happening in the field. It's a growing field. So there's a lot of research happening around as well, around the world from academics. Lot of improvements in improvements in the models and in statistical models that we can just use right away, so we don't have to write our own algorithms. And in that sense, there are improvements happening in deep learning quite a lot, and that's in fact a subject we have, and the curriculum gets updated almost every time the course is run because there's something new the next time the course is run. So there are rapid changes which happen, and that is part of the curriculum.
And the interesting thing I think you mentioned there was, you know, there are existing models that have been built, for example, for like, you know, speech and text recognition, a lot of pre-existing models for sort of, you know, financial calculations. So it's important for businesses, right, to not go and try and reinvent the wheel in these areas, but to sort of, you know, almost treat it like an open source library where mm-hmm. you look for the things you need, you bring it in and you modify it slightly for your own business process, but you're not trying to invest huge amounts of money, you know, doing what's already been done before.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are you finding with the industry, placing the students in the industry and the feedback from the actual companies? Are you putting that back into the curriculum quite regularly, as you mentioned before? Is that the way the process works, or do you get together with the faculty and go through it together? Or
yes, the curriculum is usually updated very regularly, almost every time the subject is run, because we get feedback from students, and in the case of working with industry partners, they get feedback from industry partners on how the whole process went. So if there are changes we can make to the assessment models or the things that we are looking for among students, the improving the process itself, the kinds of support we can give to students and industry partners, there are always improvements that are done in the next iteration of this particular subject which is run. So usually those industry partners are brought about by the team which is particularly looking for this partnership, which manages the partnership between industry and university. And there are also sometimes students who bring in their own industry partners from their own workplaces, and so on. So there's a growing database of people who are interested in to work with the university students.
Fantastic. And look, obviously you've got access to all these different students and ideas and industries. Is there any particular industries in Australia where we just should innovate and use data science correctly? Is there anything that you've seen, your own opinion?
Particular industries, I've actually been looking at projects from these iLabs for say more than 3 or 4 years now, and I've pretty much seen almost all kinds of industries coming in and see their projects take shape with the students. So so I think the key thing is looking for the right fit and what data can be used for what project, and if it really makes sense to use that data, or if they want to go ahead and look for more data to make use in that particular industry. But generally, a lot of industries today have data as the key commodity. So it's a really good source of power for them. And also, it's a good thing to turn it into value. So they do collect quite a lot of data about the different operations. But what can happen better probably is how the teams talk to each other. So there's a data infrastructure team, which is probably doing all the groundwork, seeing what data to collect and so on. And they need to communicate with the data scientists or data analysts who work with the data to see if they really have everything they need or if they have to put something else in place, and have this good conversation among these different teams so they have the right setup, because that's sometimes missing in some places because they work as different teams and they don't have what exactly they're looking for.
And from UTS's side of things, I guess, coming back to what we were talking about before around the transdisciplinary innovation. So that's a very, very interesting thing. I think you're one of the only universities in the world that's kind of offering this type of degree, aren't you?
Yes, we are. It's one of the distinguishing factors, like I said, because it was the first degree which had the transdisciplinary component. A lot of the other degrees were looking for purely technical skills or had a different focus, whereas this, we had this key focus, which was made deliberate to look at all of these different skills and those diverse backgrounds and disciplines that people come from. And a lot of projects are also looking at these complex problems we can solve with the number of stakeholders and collaborators we can bring in from these diverse disciplines.
Are you finding that there's a lot of local students online with your courses, or is international students also at the moment, or is it a balance, is it a mix?
It is a mix. So we usually have, in the particular degree, we do have domestic students quite a lot. And they are, most of them are working other jobs and they study part-time to make this, as a kitchen or as to get new skills or so on. It's generally a mix, but we do have a range of students like different walks of life.
Thank you very much for coming on today, Shivani. I really appreciate your insights into what's going on at UTS, because look, we work with UTS a fair bit, Carl and I, and we really like what's going on there and producing the type of students that are going to make a difference in the world, and obviously, especially in data science, a growing area. But I'd like to thank you for coming on today, and from Carl and I. But definitely have to have you on in our round tables next year, especially with your opinion on what's going on in the space and expansion. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Great, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Shivani.
Thanks, Carl.